You are listening to Natural Born Alchemist.
This is episode number 343 of the Natural Born Alchemist podcast. And my name is Alex, and I will be your host. And this is a special one. It is going to be about my History of Alchemy podcast series, which I'm releasing on a separate feed, and I'm also doing a YouTube series of it with a lot of visuals. So if you want to watch the History of Alchemy, I suggest you go to the Natural Born Alchemist YouTube channel or the Rumble channel and watch it there. So far I've released two episodes. The third is on the way. And I don't know how many episodes there will be, but I'm sure it's going to be probably a lot, because my telling of the history of alchemy is somewhat detailed, and it doesn't move along quickly, and this is intentional, because I want to be detailed, and I want to also learn a lot while doing it. Learn while you're listening. So it's a two-way street, as they say. So in this episode, I just wanted to promote it and play the first episode, which is more like an introduction, really. And if you enjoy it, I suggest you look in the program notes and follow the History of Alchemy podcast series. And also, you know, subscribe to the YouTube and the Rumble if you want to check it out. But anyway, here is episode 1 of the History of Alchemy. I appreciate your curiosity and interest in this History of Alchemy series. But before we can begin, I need to provide a disclaimer and a general introduction to alchemy. I'm not going to delve into the specifics of alchemical work in this series, like how to turn lead into gold, or provide any intricate alchemical recipes. Any true alchemist will affirm that to achieve greatness in the great work, you must be willing to get your hands dirty. Success won't be served to you on a silver platter, especially not your personal redemption, resurrection, and liberation. However, I will detail the philosophy, symbolism, mythology, and historical events of alchemy, among other significant aspects. If you're already well versed in this topic, I hope you'll find this series entertaining. And if you're a complete novice, I aim to make it as accessible as possible. Alchemy is a mystery wrapped in an enigma. And while I'm not all-knowing, I do have 2 decades worth of experience with alchemy, and I hope that counts for something. I'm neither a scholar nor a guru, and all you will learn is what I deem to be worth learning about based on my own direct experience with alchemy. Thus, take this series with a grain of salt, a pinch of sulfur, and a touch of mercury. There will have to be a lot of necessary speculation on my part, but there always is when discussing events that occurred hundreds or even thousands of years ago. Especially since alchemy involves so many riddles, misdirections, and secrets. There will also be possible errors made, and for that I'm sorry in advance, but I shall do my best to keep these to a minimum.
The history of alchemy is peppered with hearsay, mythologies, lies, legends, embellishments, rumors, and scandals. Choices will have to be made, which means that in the end, this is my version of the history of alchemy. Finally, I want to apologize in advance for any erroneous pronunciation of words or names. Now, before we can properly begin, we also first need to understand what alchemy is and what alchemy means in a general sense. The term is heavily misused these days, in the same way, for example, as anarchy is incorrectly used to imply chaos, when it in fact is the opposite of chaos. But that's another topic for another time. Most people in the uninitiated crowd think that alchemy is only about turning lead into gold, about finding the philosopher's stone, and that it's nothing more than a pseudo-science. As we shall see, it is not as simple as making gold or finding the stone. And in terms of it being a pseudoscience, this view fails to appreciate the theoretical and empirical rigor of the alchemists of old. To apply modern views on ancient peoples is both unfair and anachronistic. We owe the alchemists of old more than what they owe us. In its heyday, alchemy was a respected science, and its existence greatly accelerated the development of what we now refer to as science. The term alchemy often implies change or the blending of various elements. While this interpretation is partially correct, it oversimplifies the concept. For instance, if I practice aerobics daily, I cannot claim to be training in a martial art. Even though I am conditioning my body, I have not committed myself to a codified system steeped in tradition, honor, and wisdom. I cannot state that I am participating in an art form practiced for a plethora of reasons, such as self-defense, physical, mental and spiritual development, or the preservation of a nation's cultural heritage. Aerobics is a form of exercise, but it's not a martial art. Similarly, alchemy may suggest change, but mere change is not alchemy. Alchemy is an art form, often referred to as the great work. If mastered, the alchemist can transform base metals into gold, but this barely scratches the surface of the story. The alchemist, whether self-proclaimed or not, is primarily seeking to unravel a mystery, a hidden secret, the unknown. And this quest for discovery is pursued for a reason. It's about genuine change, a transformation as astounding as Jesus emerging from his own tomb. As stated in the 3rd century non-canonical Gnostic Gospel, the Gospel of Philip.
Those who say they will die first and then rise are in error. If they do not first receive the resurrection while they live, when they die, they will receive nothing.
Alchemy is an esoteric and occult practice. This art is all about trying to unveil, understand, and unify. It is also about change, transformation, and transmutation. From what I have learned, nothing will ever remain hidden by default, and everything will eventually transform, especially that which has already been transformed. Josephine Peledan, a 20th century French novelist and occultist, once wrote,
"Artist, you are a priest. Art is the great mystery. Artist, you are a king. Art is the true empire. Artist, you are a magician. Art is the great miracle."
Alchemy is an art form, and together with astrology, it is the oldest science known to the world, even if scientists today would not classify it as such. Just as astrology has transformed into astronomy, with the latter ridiculing the symbolism of the former ancient sages, chemistry also ridicules alchemy. In fact, any chemist wanting to keep their job best not mention any faith in the art of alchemy. Chemistry deals only with matter and never with spirit. It would be a rarity to find a chemist who opens his or her heart and prays before commencing laboratory work. And even if that were not the case, what chemist believes that prayer is essential for work to actually bear fruit? An alchemist that doesn't pray, or at least involve spirit in the work, is nothing more than a chemist. The actual word alchemy is derived from Egyptian or Arabic alchemin or alchem, and means divine chemistry or black earth, the latter referring to the silt deposits from the annual flooding of the Nile. Chemia, the land of black earth, is most likely the old name for Egypt. The word chemistry is possibly derived from the Greek word chimia, meaning the art of alloying metals, and it could have originally meant to cast together or weld, which also fits the term alchemy when it concerns the mixing of things. Interestingly, the term chemistry still carries with it the occult wisdom of the past in its usage when describing the vibe one can sense with another, the chemistry between two people. Alchemy combines elements of chemistry, physics, astrology, art, metallurgy, medicine, mysticism, and religion. Porcelain, alcohol distillation, acids, salts, and a variety of metallic compounds and laboratory equipment are all the results of early alchemical experiments. Sometime between the 3rd and the 7th century, an important text emerged, now known as the Emerald Tablet, containing the famous phrase, "As above, so below." It was also during this period in time, in the year 290, that Emperor Diocletian decided to seek out all Egyptian books on alchemy and other occult sciences and burn them, because he was afraid that the riches they could create might finance a revolt against his empire. This is one of the greatest tragedies in history, since the act destroyed all progress that had been made for hundreds, perhaps thousands of years up to that point. The Asclepian Dialogues and the Divine Pymander were some of the few fragments that survived this holocaust of knowledge. There were obvious dangers for the performing alchemists, and this did not end when Diocletian most likely took his own life in 312, but continued especially into the Middle Ages. It was out of this fear of political and mostly religious persecution that alchemy became a secret art, a hidden secret, which is the meaning of the word occult. But it is not the only reason, as alchemists do not willingly cast pearls before swine. Until the end of the 16th century, magic was not considered a superstition, but a logical and rational way of understanding the universe and controlling one's destiny. A fundamentalist Catholic looking for someone to burn at the stake would not kill someone that could make gold. And this is probably why, because of the fear of imprisonment and even death, that alchemists began to lean on the gold-making aspects of alchemy.
During the Middle Ages, alchemy was not only a philosophy and a science, but also a religion. Those who rebelled against the religious limitations of their day concealed their philosophic teachings under the allegory of gold-making. In this way, they preserved their personal liberty and were ridiculed rather than persecuted.
The process of recruiting new individuals to the craft has evolved into a science in itself, complete with symbolic rituals, cryptic teachings, and initiations. Each initiation represents a step in the student's journey towards illumination. This led to the establishment of various initiatory orders and societies, which began to emerge throughout Europe from the 17th century onwards. The most notable among these are undoubtedly the Knights Templar, the Freemasons, and the Rosicrucians. The Philosopher's Stone is a substance that alchemists have sought in order to enact the permanent transmutation of base metals into gold. This concept was first mentioned by Zosimos the Theban in the 3rd century, though some propose a more ancient origin, suggesting it could date back to biblical times, with Adam possibly acquiring knowledge of the Philosopher's Stone directly from God. This knowledge was said to have been passed down through biblical patriarchs, thus enabling them to live long lives. The legend of the stone has also been compared to the biblical history of Solomon's temple. Thus, finding, discovering, or creating the stone was considered tantamount to discovering the Holy Grail. Mixing a solution of the stone with spirits of wine reportedly creates a legendary universal panacea. This elixir of life, as it is best known, is said to have the power to cure all diseases, restore health and youth, and prolong life indefinitely. Archibald Cochrane's book, Alchemy Rediscovered and Restored, provides the following summary of the alchemist's quest.
What was the motive behind the constant strivings, the never-failing patience in the unraveling of the mysteries, the tenacity of purpose in the face of persecution and ridicule through the countless ages that led the alchemist to pursue undaunted his appointed way? The accounts of their lives, almost without exception, lead us to believe that they were concerned with things spiritual rather than with things temporal. Rather were these men inspired by a vision of man made perfect, of man freed from disease and the limitations of warring faculties, both mental and physical, standing as a god in the realization of a power that even at this very moment of time is lying hidden in the deeper strata of his consciousness. A vision of man made truly in the image and likeness of the one divine life in all its perfection, beauty, and harmony.
Alchemy expanded greatly during the 19th and 20th century, and it became, according to strict practical laboratory scholars, cluttered with magic, occultism, New Age ideas, shamanism, kitchen chemistry, and other psychological approaches mostly inspired by the writings of Marianne Atwood and Carl Jung. However, alchemy without spiritual practices is not, in my view, alchemy. Alchemy without practical practices, so-called laboratory work, is not alchemy either. Above and below, yin and yang, and we get the whole of the great work. The history of alchemy is full of adventure, inventions, spiritual growth, weird and wonderful characters, greed and charity, life and death. It might not be a well-known part of history, but it certainly is an exciting part as far as I'm concerned. In the next episode, we will begin where one needs to begin in order to tell the history of alchemy. We need to start at the very beginning of all things, when a primordial substance, the prima materia, known to science as illum, underwent change of a truly alchemical nature. Illum is better known outside scientific circles as the cosmic egg, and when it cracked open, it gave birth to the reality we currently find ourselves in.
So, I hope you enjoyed that and it entices you to check it out. Just go to YouTube and Rumble, search for Natural Alchemist channel, or go to Spotify and Apple Podcasts and search for the History of Alchemy podcast series, and you can check it out and follow it and listen to the other episodes I've released so far. Now, to close this episode, I'm going to play a song I played before, maybe 10 years ago on this podcast. Time flies. It's by an artist called Alchemy, and the song is called Albedo. And if you want to support me, check out my Patreon, follow me on X, and again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but check out the History of Alchemy on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Rumble. See you in the next one. Freedom is in the mind.